Hello and welcome to our latest episode of Saber Speaks. My name is Tom Lee. I'm the interim superintendent, and this is the podcast where we try to communicate all the different things that are happening here in Sartell St. Stephen Schools. And today I am with two of our ninth grade English department teachers. That would include Kelsey Box and Jared Sowie. I told Jared earlier, it's like, I know another person's last name. I know I'm going to call him by that last name. So if I do, please forgive me, audience. So anyway, so first of all, let's get a couple of things off the table. Tell us a little bit about your backgrounds. How long have you been in the district? Did you come straight out of college? Did you come from another district? And to date, what has your experience been like in Sartell St. Stephen? We'll start with you, Kelsey.
Okay. So like Tom said, my name is Kelsey Box. I went to school at the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth. And graduated in 2017 and came straight to Sartell. So I have been here my whole teaching career, so this is my seventh year in the district. And I've taught English 9 and creative writing and English 11, a bunch of stuff. So
great. Yeah. And so far it's been good?
Yeah, it's been great.
Awesome. So you were actually in the old high school, too.
I was, yeah. I had my first 2 years in the old high school, and then we moved over.
How's that experience been?
Good. Yeah, the building is beautiful, and it's been great.
Great. All right. Thanks. Jared, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yep. So like Tom said, my name is Jared Sowie. This is my fourth year here at Sartell. I came directly from college. I graduated from Concordia in Moorhead in 2020.
Oh, you're a cobber.
Yep. Cobber. that means I got hired during the craziness of COVID and distance learning and hybrid learning and all that stuff. So it's been smooth sailing from there. It got easier and easier after that. And it's been a great experience. And I have only known this school as the only school I've ever formerly worked at, so I'm pretty lucky to have a building like this, and everything's been great in my experience. So.
And are you guys involved in other things? I know, Jared, you're involved in like girls tennis.
Yep. So I coach girls tennis in the fall, and then I coach basketball in the winter, boys basketball, and then I'm actually the head boys tennis coach in the spring too. So.
Okay.
I am the advisor for the Fem Club here, which is the feminist club that some of our freshmen started last year.
Yep.
So I advise what they're doing. And then I used to be the prom coordinator, so I've moved on from that, but I did that for 3 years.
Great. Okay. So not only do you teach here, but you're also doing extracurriculars. And when a club gets started, it gets kind of started by kids, and then we need an advisor, and so you stepped up and were the advisor.
Yep.
All right, great. Well, let's talk a little bit about English 9. I do know that English 9 has a lot of different elements to it, but I'm not sure I know all the different elements. So could you talk a little bit about the overall like description? What is English 9 like?
So English 9 is a semester-long course, and we do every aspect of English in that. So we do grammar, vocab, reading, writing, all of that. So one of the main components of our class is Reader's Workshop. So students pick books, and we get about 15 to 30 minutes every day in class to just read their choice books, which is one of the best parts of it.
Yep.
They do a lot of reading on that. Quarter A, we read a book called Dear Martin and read a bunch of short stories about coming of age. And then they write their own coming of age stories, which our students are working on right now. And then quarter two, they write a research paper. So we switch what we do and do the research paper, and then Romeo and Juliet to end out the semester.
So the two main books are really Dear Martin and Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's choice books and Reader's Workshop and a lot of language arts and some research.
Yep.
So that's English 9 for the most part.
Yep.
And because we're on the block schedule, it only lasts a semester. If we're on a different schedule, it might be a whole year-long class.
Yep, correct.
Correct?
Yep.
Okay, and so let's jump into a little bit about Dear Martin. So when I first arrived, I heard a little bit of, you know, the conflict about Dear Martin and so on. And help me understand how, you know, what happened. What happened before Dear Martin? What prompted us to change? And what has our experience been?
I'll take this one, too. So
Jared keeps pointing.
I wasn't here yet to make that decision.
Okay. Yeah, so I was around in 2020 when we made that decision. And before that, we taught To Kill a Mockingbird in ninth grade. And that's a large book. It's a heavy book for ninth graders to understand, and we did a lot of work with it. And not that we're afraid of work or that our students aren't capable of it, but it was just a lot for them to do in a quarter. So in 2020, we decided we needed to switch, or we'd kind of been thinking about switching. And then in 2020, we were told, you know, let's find a new book. And so that summer, we spent a couple weeks reading books and trying to find one that was perfect. And The one we landed on that would work and we'd have in time for the next year that would be good was Dear Martin. Part of that is that we could tie in our coming of age theme that we've had throughout the whole quarter, that we could tie in nonfiction that's in our ELA standards, and that we could tie in different aspects of the book that relate to those nonfiction articles, so we could teach nonfiction writing with that.
Isn't there also a standard about having diverse voices?
Yeah, diverse voices and perspective taking. So students being able to take someone else's perspective. So we try in our short stories and through Dear Martin and Romeo and Juliet and everything to try to get as many voices as possible in our curriculum.
And that's one of the biggest strengths of, like, with Nick Stone, the author of Dear Martin, with her writing. Like, she does such a great job of that authentic perspective, and like, to the point where even sometimes when we're reading it, it's like, man, I as a teacher struggle to try to, like, how can I even try to get them to connect to this, because she does a nice job of detailing a perspective that, you know, a lot of people don't have,
and that neither of us have had.
And so it really makes you kind of think outside the box about just everything, about the way that, you know, that people like her have experienced these certain things. So.
Yep. Well, I heard that it was an anti-cop book, that it was a CRT book, so I felt compelled to read it myself, right? Mm-hmm. And so, honestly, I have a son who's a cop. I don't see it as anti-cop, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely not CRT, right? It's basically talks about implicit bias, and almost every character demonstrates some level of implicit bias. It's a story about a young African-American man who ends up doing very, very well in his neighborhood school, almost being made fun of, and so mom decides he's going to have to go to a different school, so she enrolls him in this very well-to-do private school where he's one of just a couple of students of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a perspective that he has, and he's writing Martin Luther King, like, Dear Martin, I know that this is what you stood for. I want to stand for this too, you know, and so that's the whole premise of the book. But it's also about, you know, not only do some of the students that he encounters there have some of these implicit biases, but he confronts his own implicit biases. You know, his mother has implicit biases, you know, and so on. So I just see it as a book that honestly I would think that would generate a ton of conversation, especially with ninth-grade kids.
Yes. So it does. And, in the last couple of years in particular, the kids are very thoughtful, and it, like, some of the questions and the conversations, they blow me away with some of the stuff that they're able to ask. And we do focus on, you talked about implicit bias and how it's just this vicious cycle of, you know, the purpose of Justice's letters to Martin is to try to break that, to be nonviolent and nonjudgmental. And then throughout the book, you see it from characters of all backgrounds, of all races, where they fail to do that, and it hurts other people. It harms everyone, and it just comes all the way around full circle, and nobody ever benefits or gains from that.
Right.
And one of the things we focus on early in the quarter, we watch a TED Talk called The Danger of a Single Story.
Yep.
And so we point at that right away when we start the book, when there is that interaction with Justice and the police officer. We say, what is the danger of the officer knowing only the single story of Justice being a kid in a hoodie?
Right.
And then what is the danger of now Justice having this be the only interaction with a police officer? So how is that going to change his perspective when that's his single story of the police? And how is that not fair? So we look at both of those sides and try to pull that through the whole book. What's the single story that people are seeing, and how is that unfair to the group that they are stereotyping or judging?
Yeah, and you see that in Justice's struggle with when that policeman that he has the interaction with early on in the book actually gets killed,
mm-hmm.
and he struggles with, well, my interaction wasn't great with him, but it wasn't worthy of him getting killed. And then later there's another interaction with another policeman. It's a little bit more violent than that, mm-hmm. one, with where his friend Manny gets killed,
yep.
And Justice gets injured. But then he learns that gentleman, who was an off-duty policeman at the time, was the partner of the policeman he had the earlier interaction with, and he makes a statement somewhere in there, something to the line is like, well, maybe he was traumatized. I know about trauma. My dad had trauma. Mm-hmm. I've seen that, mm-hmm. right? So he connects even with a person who is really was very dangerous to both him and his friend. So.
Yeah, he makes that connection of the PTSD, and I think one of the best parts of our quarter is We had a police panel a couple weeks ago. We invited local police officers and people that worked in the sheriff's department, and one of them talked about their struggles with PTSD and now how he's the chief of police and he's working on that with his officers to make sure that all-around wellness is the goal, not mm-hmm. just physical wellness or being good at your job, but making sure you are mentally well from some of the interactions that they have that really can't be unseen. So focusing on how to change that. And I thought that was a really good connection for the kids to see from the book to real life.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and just to touch on the police panel as a whole too, I mean, we make an effort whenever possible and whenever it works for all the parties involved is we've had members of St. Cloud, Sartell, police departments, and then Stearns County Sheriff's Office, and other community members too. And they all come in and the kids get a chance to ask some of those types of questions and just talk about their own perspectives on things of the world of the book or things outside the world of the book, right? And a lot of times they end up opening up about experiences they've had, but then there will be kids too that'll ask things about their perspective on some of the references or some of the violence or some of the judgments made in the book. And mm-hmm. just that was so valuable to the kids too. I mean, I think like some of the stuff that we saw, the discussion there was amazing, and the officers and the community members did an incredible job too. So we've really benefited from doing that as kind of a way to round out the whole perspective of the story.
Right, and really the interaction with the policemen happens early in the book and then later in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the interactions that are going on are really between student to student,
yeah,
right?
Peers, yes. Yeah.
Peers, and it's the implicit bias they all have towards each other.
Yep.
There's a segment in the book where they decide they're going to go to a Halloween party, given the fact that we're recording this on Halloween. It's like, and so they all decided that they were going to dress up like
stereotypes.
Yes. So Justice goes as a gangster, and one of his white friends goes as a member of the KKK.
Yep.
And I don't know if you get an opportunity to talk about judgment and its impact on things that happen, but boy, that would be a great topic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I always touch on, like, now think about this from the perspective of now and people having those things sent to colleges. Like, what if that picture of Blake was sent to a college he wanted to go to?
Right.
Like, how is that impacting his future now that he was dressed up as a KKK member?
Right. Well, in the book, Justice being dressed up like a gangster kind of came back to
yeah, it does. It gets sent to the media.
Well. Yeah. It's sent to the media, and it kind of plays into a narrative,
mm-hmm.
you know, that really isn't fair to Justice, but it does play into it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Right.
So it's like, so generally speaking, when on a scale of 1 to 10, as far as engagement, and I guess this is going to be for you. you know, how well did kids engage with the former book, which would be To Kill a Mockingbird, and how do they compare with Dear Martin?
I think once we got into To Kill a Mockingbird, they liked it. I would say engagement, though, probably a 5 to 6, just because it was a lot of reading at home, and
yep.
some of them don't have time to read at home, whereas Dear Martin, we get to read it all in class together. So I would say that engagement has gone up a ton. And it's more relatable to them, you know? It's set in 2012 versus the 1930s.
Right.
So they get to, and it's told from a 17-year-old's perspective instead of a 6-year-old's perspective.
Right.
So they can see a lot more of themselves sometimes in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Justice or Jared or any of them, they can kind of relate to it because they have friends that might be relatable.
Yep. And I mean, my comparison point is a little bit different just because I didn't have To Kill a Mockingbird before. But from the courses I've taught here or just anything in my teaching experience, I tell people it's the most engaging book that I've ever worked with in a classroom setting.
As far as
getting kids to think and respond and they get excited for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to remind them, like, hey, don't go out of the room and spoil it for everybody else what's going to happen in the book, because they're talking about it. I mean, you walk by, and
yeah.
we'll overhear it in conversation. I mean, it's one of those things that I in my experience, I have rarely seen that level of in-class excitement and engagement with any sort of novel. And it, again, it stems back to being relatable and from a young perspective, and it checks a lot of boxes, I think, that kids can appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not – always easy to get a ninth grader to read.
No.
Right? And not only is it that they don't have time, I'm not necessarily inclined, giving all the variety of options that I have available to me, like on my devices or playing games or going on social media, reading probably is like down
it's not
the
always
list.
Option one.
So it's nice. And I think that's one of those things that we're trying to get kids to do, right? We want kids to be readers, right?
Yep.
And we want them to read about different perspectives. And we want them to give consideration to their own perspective, their own bias, and just be alert to those kinds of things and how that can kind of create some level of awkwardness at times, right?
Absolutely. Right?
So how long does the Dear Martin unit actually take?
We started about week 3 or 4, and we just wrapped up last week. Yeah, so
about a month or a little bit over a month.
About a month,
Yep, and then there are other activities, of course, that lead up to it where we talk about bias and we talk about stereotypes and stuff like that to prep us for the book. And then right now they're writing their paper, which is their coming-of-age story, since everything revolves around a coming-of-age story.
Yep.
So the last couple of weeks are
The coming-of-age focus is most of the quarter.
Mean,
from probably about week 2 or 3 to the end of the quarter. And the novel itself is about half of that, about a month worth of that.
Tell me about coming-of-age. What's that mean? What's that look like?
Well, what we focus on with this personal narrative that the kids are writing about now is a moment in time or a period of time or experience they've had that has helped shape who they are and who they want to be. Right? Well, that's one of the main focuses, and to bring it back to Dear Martin, one of the questions he ends up asking himself is, you know, what kind of man are you going to be when the world, you know, when the world deals a certain hand to you or when things happen, what kind of person are you going to be? And so it gives kids a chance to think about what have they been through, and in you know, it can be something really a major life event, or it can be as simple as, you know, I felt like I was misjudged or I misjudged somebody else or anything like that. And then how has that kind of shaped who they are now? And then how are they going to use that into who they want to be or who they anticipate becoming in the future, too? So,
yeah, what lessons have they learned in their 14, 15 years that could help them see the world in a new light? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a time they had to grow up before they wanted to, or misjudging a person, having someone misjudge you, like Jared said, something like that.
As you say that, a couple of things are coming by my mind. So I have a dear friend who is a twin brother, right? And the two twin brothers are the eldest, right? And their father died when they were in college.
Mm-hmm.
Massive heart attack, they're done. And I remember asking my friend, like, so what did you do? And he said, I realized that failure was no longer an option.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that was that kind of life event that
absolutely.
Set him on a path, right?
Yeah.
You know, and different people have different kinds of things, right?
But, and we both give our examples to our classes of our coming of age moment. We share our examples of the planning sheet and then our starts of our essays so that they can kind of get to know us too and feel like they can share with us if they're nervous about writing something.
And you get stories across the board. And again, not everybody has had something potentially. That, you know,
correct.
A lot of times kids will come and say, I don't know what I'm going to write about.
Maybe getting a dog, and it was more responsibility.
Starting
than
high school as a ninth grader, right? Yep. You come into the building. What did you expect? What is it really like? You know, just little things like that. They don't realize how much it impacts you until you kind of look back and reflect, and it's a chance to do that. So it doesn't have to be a major, major life event. It can still be something that has shaped you or helped you become who you are. So.
Yeah. Yep. I had an opportunity to travel when I was in high school. I went to the American School in London, England.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had lots of different opportunities as a result of that. When I was there, didn't really necessarily understand the significance of what I was going through. But like, you know, I played basketball. I played men's volleyball.
Sweet.
You know, we're in Europe, right?
Yeah.
And so that's so it's a league. And so you had the opportunity. So like here, if we go to sections, we might go to Sauk Rapids, and if you go to state, you go down to Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
So in Europe, so our section was the United Kingdom. And then state would have been somewhere on the continent.
Sure.
Wow.
So it was Paris 1 year. It was Brussels another year.
Wow.
It was The Hague another year, and so on. And so it's just what you do, right? It's, everybody's doing that. So you kind of perceive that, and you don't really realize the impact it's going to have on you long term until you look back.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's a little bit of that coming of age thing. I think that's really exciting that kids get an opportunity to at least think about it and to reflect on it. Again, ninth graders. So we got a range, right? We got a range of maturity levels.
Absolutely.
We got a range of lots of different things, right? But in the end, I think it's a good topic. So now I do know that you know, there have been, you know, when someone says, well, I really don't want to do that, we do offer an alternative. Yep. I also read that book as well, This Tender Land.
Mm-hmm.
I personally liked This Tender Land. Just simply because the descriptive language was more of a classic literature. The
storytelling is fantastic.
The storytelling is amazing. It takes place here in Minnesota, but it is the 1930s. It is two white brothers that get, supposedly there's no room at the orphanage, so they got to go to the Indian school.
Right.
And that takes a lot of twists and turns. But I got to tell you, in ninth grade, I probably would have much preferred Dear Martin, because it took me probably five times as long to get through This Tender Land as it did Dear Martin, because they're totally different kinds of pieces of literature.
They are.
Right?
Yep. And I had one student opt out this year, and he did a phenomenal job with the curriculum and everything, and he kept up with us, and he loved the book. So that's great.
Have you had kids opt out too?
Yep. And it's an option, and it's, like you said, it's a good story, and it focuses on the same concept of figuring out your place in the world, and all that checks all those boxes, and I do really love the story that it tells too.
Yeah. So. I was really intrigued. I couldn't wait. So I listened via Audible, right, because I have this hour and a half drive.
It'd be a good one for
each
Audible.
Each way. Yeah. It's great.
It was good. I listened to it. We did it in summer school this year for English 9.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So. Yeah, it was great because I can go up to 1.5.
Yep,
I don't have to listen
to
it regularly. But I just found myself wanting to come back to my car.
Sure.
Because I want to listen to it again.
Yep.
I actually had that same experience with Dear Martin because that took turns I didn't anticipate.
Right.
Both books took turns that I did not anticipate, which to me is kind of fun literature.
It is,
right?
It is.
Right?
Oh, it's...
In reflection, so we've grown through this. We've kind of settled in on this. It's a good experience for kids. We're comfortable with it. Are there any changes in the future that's on the horizon?
If we look at changes, we've been gradually making changes because curriculum shouldn't be static, right? Like, we should always be making the changes that are best for our students. Right now, we haven't really looked at anything concrete, but we do know that with the new standards coming out for ELA in 2025, we need to incorporate American Indian literature, specifically with Anishinaabe or Dakota. So we are looking at a graphic novel, maybe, to incorporate. And that's kind of our next.
And that's actually a state mandate.
Yep, right? Absolutely. Yep.
So one of the things that I think sometimes people might feel is that we're just doing some things, but really what we're trying to do is we're trying to follow the law, right? and the statutes.
Yep.
This most recent one is, like, we have to align our literature for specific American Indian authors and so on. Well, it's already 23 minutes in.
Wow.
And so it's like, wasn't that quick?
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah,
time flies.
I want to thank you for your efforts with our kids. I know that I actually got a chance to come into, you were on prep, Jared, but you were involved, and I had some nice conversation with a couple of kids, and they were clearly engaged.
Yep.
What were they doing again?
They were prepping for their final tests.
Yes.
So finding places in their Dear Martin books where vocab words come up, so they could quote it and describe the application of it. So they're such a nice group.
Yep.
Yeah, we got some good kids.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for all your work with our kids, both inside the classroom and outside the classroom. Thank you for your efforts here. And hopefully this podcast helps, our listening audience learn a little bit more about what's going on here. We actually, we've had nothing to hide, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's some great things happening for kids in these books. And so thank you again, and thank you to our listening audience. And this marks the end of our show. Have a great day.